This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. Our email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. We're privileged and pleased to have in studio Bishop Michael Duca of the Diocese of Baton Rouge, the Roman Catholic Diocese, which is one of the large ones in our state, second only to New Orleans, I believe.
Maybe Lafayette's a little bit bigger than
really?
Us. Yeah.
Well, Lafayette has a preponderance
in number of Catholics,
Roman Catholics. But Michael Duca previously was Bishop of Shreveport, correct?
That's right.
Correct. And that's an area that's not known for a wide group of Roman Catholics, but there are some, as we know.
Very small percentage, about 40,000 Catholics in that diocese, and twice as big of a land mass, but land area, but a very vibrant community as well.
Well, I'm told there are 215,298 Catholics in the Diocese of Baton Rouge. I don't know who counts, but that's a big number. 24.3% of the population of the greater Baton Rouge area, which includes many parishes and, of course, many which have been affected by coronavirus and COVID-19. There are more than 100 priests as well. Are all your priests okay?
Right now, everybody's checking in healthy and going well, doing well.
And the Archbishop of New Orleans, Gregory Amon, we know that he's been fighting coronavirus. Is the prognosis good for him on what you know?
As far as I know, he's moving forward and healing, and I think he probably hopes to be ready for the Easter Triduum.
Was he hospitalized or is he convalescing?
No, as far as I know, he stayed at home the whole time.
Well, in the Catholic Commentator of March 13th, and to show you how the world has changed in a few weeks, this from the bishop, he writes, during the week of March 2, I put out at least three notices describing the Diocese of Baton Rouge's response to the possible arrival of the coronavirus here in Louisiana. And the diocese, by the time you read this, they may already be a confirmed case. The fact that I put out three notices, and all of them a little different, was because of how fast the perceived concern grew in just a few days. I also began to hear of some misinterpretations of the chances we were making to our celebration of the Mass and the guidelines we were suggesting as best practices in this situation, and you did have to make some adjustments, and those are groundbreaking. I don't know in any time in modern time when services have been suspended, but that's where we are right now. How difficult was that for you to make that call?
In some ways, it wasn't difficult at all because it seemed like it was a kind of one of those decisions that seemed very clear and needed. Also, we were getting very firm direction from our governor, and I wanted to be a part of the overall effort in Louisiana, and actually the country, in order to put the spread of this virus, at least slow it down, and certainly not be a nexus point for it to grow. And so I felt, of course, we gather so many people together on a Sunday across the whole state of Louisiana and across our whole diocese, that we would become a tremendous generator of the virus. And so it was very easy to shut it down. And by the time we did it, I think everybody was on board. The schools had closed, and the governor was giving very strong direction.
As we know, there's a pastor in the central area who continues to hold services even after being arrested. What do you make of this?
Well,
not a Roman Catholic.
I understand. I think all of us are called to make decisions based on wisdom and facts. Sometimes people, I think, don't understand that. Yes, God does protect us, but He also gave us. There's an interesting phrase from St. Thomas Aquinas. He says, "Grace works on nature." That is, God works with us, but He also gives us a lot of the gifts that He wants to use to help us move forward. And one of them is reason. One of them is be reasonable, common sense. And I think that grace does not trump those things. It works with them. And I think that's a fault in this particular pastor's thinking.
Well, Bishop Michael Duca grew up in Dallas, correct?
I did.
How'd you end up in Louisiana?
By the call of a bishop, the bishop in Washington, Archbishop, at that time Archbishop Sanvey, called me from representing the Pope and said, the Holy Father calls you to be the new Bishop of Shreveport. I had to figure out what that was, Shreveport, and I said yes. And in 2008, and 6 weeks later, I was in Shreveport as the bishop.
When did you have this calling to be a priest?
Oh, when I was young. I think I tell people when I was in grade school, maybe eighth grade, I remember looking at the priest one day at Mass and saying, I can do that. And I think that was the first call. I mean, why would I think that? I don't. Mm-hmm. I think it was a grace. I continued to follow up on it, and every step of the way, I just found the call affirmed in my life, and I found myself coming more alive, more I said yes to that call.
That would have been around 1965 then.
Around that, I was ordained in 1978, graduated from high school in 70. This is my 50th anniversary year. Probably our 50th celebration is going to be canceled. But, so
1970. But you were a young man in Dallas when the Cowboys were getting started, and, of course, that city and our country and the world.
The Cowboys. The only Cowboys that I really know, I think. Well, we'll go to another subject.
Started in 1960.
Yeah.
But you were also there. You would have been, 11 years old when President Kennedy was killed. Do you remember that day?
I have too many of those kind of days now. I was thinking about this the other day. Yes, that was the first day that shook my life in a very foundational way, where I felt that it wasn't just something bad happened. It was like some inner sense of stability was shaken, like this shouldn't have happened. You know, then we had the Challenger thing, which was very shaking in terms of our sense of the space program. Then 9/11, you know, Katrina. I realized Katrina was such an earth-shaking thing for the people of Louisiana. I've had too many of those days. You know, the first large, mass shooting, all those things have just been continually shaking our fundamental security. And now this, coming at us from this kind of virus, invisible virus, is another one. I remember exactly. I was in grade school when they announced it, and in fifth grade, all the kids were crying and not knowing why exactly. We knew this was important. And I feel myself being unsettled kind of in the same way even now. And I said, too many of those days, just too many.
And President Kennedy was the first and to this point only Roman Catholic to be president of
the United States.
And at that time, that was something that was difficult to get past in politics. Not in Massachusetts, where he was from, but when he ran nationally, many thought he would be a no-go because of his religion.
That's right. And he was not really well-loved for a lot of people in Texas either. It was a hard visit for him down there.
And it didn't turn out well.
No, it didn't.
But they were, what was it, Nellie Connolly's words to him, the last words ever said to President Kennedy. She turned around as he was about to be shot and said, "You can't say Dallas doesn't love you, Mr. President."
Yeah, that's right. They did show him a great bit of love.
But Michael Duca ended up in Louisiana and, as mentioned, was Bishop of Shreveport and moved south, Baton Rouge, and has been bishop here for almost 2 years. And August 24th, 2018, was when he was officially installed as the sixth bishop, I believe, of the Baton Rouge Diocese. And you've got a wide flock as far as parishes and, of course, different kinds of people. And right now, many of them are at home who would like to go to church, but for obvious reasons cannot do so. What do you say to those who feel like there's a big void in their lives right now, and that would be one of the biggest voids for people who have this habit, if you will, of going to church weekly or sometimes daily?
Well, first of all, I have to say, it's not a void that you should, it's real. It's not going to go away. It's there. Anytime we have an emptiness in our life left by something we love or even depend on, and this is a temporary kind of loss in our life. Loss of a loved one leaves that same kind of void, but in a very more profound way, and it's permanent. We have to find new ways to, fill that. I oftentimes tell people, when you have an emptiness like this, don't look at it as a hole, but like as a well, and just go deeper and see what's underneath deeper that you might draw from. Our faith is much broader. The church has many times over the centuries been without the sacraments, had to deprive themselves of meeting together. But the Christ is always with us in a sense that we always have the Word of God. This is true of many religions. We have the Word to nourish us. We have our common love and community of one another. We have the call to reach out to the poor. Just by ministering in love to others, we, in a sense, fill some of that void of what it means to be part of this worshiping community. And what God wants, He said, "I do not desire burnt offerings. I desire a heart changed." And so the more we can use this time for that, I think, fills that. But the void's not going to go away. It's just something we have to work within in a positive way.
But for Catholics, and I am in that number, receiving communion and what we believe to be the body of Jesus and blood of Jesus Christ is the fabric of our faith. That's something that is very important to us, and at this point we can't do that. What does that do to the morale and the perhaps the foundation of people's faith?
Well, I think it's a sacrifice. We often ask them to make a kind of spiritual communion, to really express their desire to the Lord to receive him one day in the future when they can come back to Mass. And we continue to ask them to stay close to the Lord in prayer and kind of nourish that presence within our hearts. But you're right, this is a sacrifice that you can't, like, say it's not going to hurt some, but we can't at the same time risk, obviously, the lives of people by coming together for this.
Bishop Michael Duca is with us, and we will continue our conversation with him if you'd like to join it. 877-217-5757. Later in the hour, we will hear from Steve Inskeep, the host of Morning Edition. He's working most days from home in the Washington area, but we will talk with him after we visit more with Bishop Duca. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Special visitor is the Bishop, Michael Duca, and he is in studio, the Bishop of the Diocese of Baton Rouge, with more than 215,000 members. Again, 877-217-5757. I have a few emails for the Bishop at talklouisiana.org, and one is about what Governor Cuomo discussed yesterday in New York, where the outbreak exceeds the numbers in Louisiana. And as we know, yesterday was not a good one in Louisiana. The deaths are up to 239. The positive cases up to 5237. We have 6% of the deaths in the U.S. from coronavirus. We have 1.4% of the national population. So we're four times ahead of what our population on a per capita basis should be. But Governor Cuomo yesterday was talking about his brother. He found out when he was in the middle of an announcement that his brother was battling coronavirus.
Yes.
And he said, look, he's a journalist. He's out there. And if you're out there, your chances of getting it are exponentially higher than if you stay in. And that makes sense. But here you are, and I'm sure this isn't your only stop today. You're out there. What about your schedule and the dangers that you face based on the fact that you are the spiritual leader for 215,000 Catholics in this diocese?
You know, being at kind of the top, I don't get out that much as you might think. The ones that are really getting out are the pastors, because they still have funerals. Some people are dying of normal causes as well. Now, they are graveside services, very simple, but they get out. They're still getting calls to minister to people of the sick, although a lot of times they can't get to them anymore. But they're the ones that are out there more than I am. And they're all trying to keep those distances and try to do all the safety precautions they can and carry out the ministry as best they can. Whenever I go to something like this, I make sure that I have my social distances around, and I have a little squirt bottle of a sanitizer in my pocket, and hope no one takes offense, you know, but I use it whenever I think I need it.
That's appropriate, yes.
So I'm watching out for myself, but, you know, one part of me says, you know, eventually I'm going to get this. I just kind of assume I'm going to get it one down the line. I just hope we've reached a point where the medical facilities have then geared up. We lessen that curve so they can be handled. People need the medical assistance to handle it. But I try my best to keep being at the top. I don't get out as much as you might think.
Well, Katie O'Neill, who runs the infectious disease operation at Our Lady of the Lake, was with us last week and indicated that about 50% of the people in the country are likely to get it at some point over the next 18 months. Mm-hmm. And you and I and others who were, quote, in essential occupations are more likely than others, but always there's a possibility of defying the odds. We wish Ted James, by the way, a listener notes that Ted is only 37 years old, and for those who know him, he looks like he's in fine shape, and I don't think he smokes, and he's not overweight, probably not diabetic, and 37, and he's in the hospital. He couldn't shake it off at home, and that shows you that this is a terrible disease for some people who otherwise would not be a candidate for being susceptible to going to the hospital. But Ted has pneumonia, so we wish Representative James well.
I hope they can figure out why this case, because some seem to have a very simple case and others it hits hard across the board. And so we certainly keep him in our prayers and all those who are struggling with this disease right now.
Another listener notes that it's hitting nursing homes really substantially, and quite often priests are called to nursing homes. I suspect that is now on a limited, if no go. But those people, of course, are sometimes there alone and would love to have a spiritual person in their midst. But these times are very difficult.
That's right. I was just telling my sister-in-law's mother in Dallas is in a nursing home like that where they've discovered one case, but she can't go visit. They haven't been able to visit for a few weeks now. And so those people, they do a lot of Facebooking and calling on the phone, but it's not the same as being with them. So it's a very difficult time, especially for people who have parents or family in nursing homes.
877-217-5757 for Bishop Michael Duca of Baton Rouge, David in Shenandoah. David, you're on Talk Louisiana.
Thank you, Jim. Bishop Duca, I have a question. Could you expand or explain Romans 13, 1 and 2 so the people will understand about following our government guidance?
Romans and following government guidance. Fine book of the New Testament. Is there something in there that is particularly useful at these times?
All I think about is the words of Jesus who said, give to Caesar what is Caesar and what is to God to God. And I think in these times we look to our government to guide us in giving us direction. I note that the governor did not give any kind of – it did, as I read them up recent – I haven't read them today, but there was no restrictions on meeting as a church community. We have freely chosen not to meet. We have freely chosen to keep ourselves in isolation for the protection of not just ourselves but for the other person that may be vulnerable. We don't want to be the source of an evil like this virus in someone's life. And so I believe those guidance belong to the things of Caesar for our better good. And if I felt they were in any way impinging on my religious freedom, I certainly would not bow to them, but that's not the case. The governor has given us the freedom to make these choices, and I do that freely.
Another listener inquires about what's going on in the diocese, and as we know that services are limited, are there opportunities to watch something online?
Oh, all of our priests and pastors have risen to the occasion. They have their streaming masses for their parishioners. I do a daily mass and a Sunday mass that streams over our television station. I think it's Channel 15, Catholic Life TV. So that some other cable numbers across the state. We also have it on our YouTube page, Catholic Life TV, as well. And so, but many parishes are doing it. We have one pastor over in Meriguen who is doing a 9 o'clock evening prayer. So people kind of check in. He has a kind of a running text and chat with them, and people check in. They're doing Bible studies over conference calls on the phone. People are beginning to learn how to use Zoom, and we're meeting as a staff over 360. So I talked to a man, a priest the other day. He was getting off the phone to go pray a rosary with about 20 men who are meeting online to pray the rosary. So it's happening all over. Just have to get on the internet, go to our website, diobr.org, and you can kind of get some information on that as well.
Here is another inquiry about Catholic Charities and what that organization is doing right now.
Yeah, Catholic Charities and St. Vincent de Paul are up and running still. I mean, Catholic Charities, where I came in today, I got the report, they're having over 2,000 calls coming in. They've given out thousands of dollars, 7,000 of financial assistance, 12,000 of faith fund loans. That's our alternative to payday loans. And they're keeping open their Sanctuary for Life, which is a home for pregnant women who are homeless, Joseph's Home for returning people from the prison system, their asylees, maternity clients, their foster grandparents program. They're keeping all their shelters going. St. Vincent de Paul also is keeping their shelters open. They house over 100 people every night, men, women, and children, serving 300 to 350 meals a day at their facility to the homeless. All those ministries and works are continuing on, and I would ask you to look around to others, and there are other people doing this work as well. Some are being challenged because the people that oftentimes volunteer are elderly, and they shouldn't be out, or else they don't want to. They want to help, but they don't want to bring the disease back to their families. So some are having a hard time keeping open. But for those that are still working out there, remember them. If you have a little extra money, remember them because they really need the support at this time. They're handling their regular crowd, but now a whole new group of people are asking for help. But they're out there doing the good work, and I'm really proud of them.
April 12th is Easter Sunday. That's a special day, and the president had said he hoped to have things up and running. That's not going to happen. In fact, that day is now considered by many to be the apex of this.
Right.
So what do you suggest for people during the holy season, Good Friday, Easter Sunday? What should they do?
Well, some of the parishes will be streaming these services. We'll do it from the cathedral on those days. So it'll be available on the Catholic Life TV as well. And just join in the prayers. Like for Palm Sunday, put some palms on your door.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure you take some special time on Easter to celebrate Christ risen from the dead.
We will spend a bit more time with Bishop Michael Duca of Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. We're back after this pause for the news. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing, and the numbers are sobering for the United States. The president, who at one point denounced this as pretty much not no news, now knows it's big news and says we could have 240,000 Americans die from COVID-19. Right now, the numbers of those afflicted, and these are just people who have tested positive, 189,661. That's the most in the world. 4,097 deaths reported in the U.S. thus far. That's third in the world behind Italy and Spain. And as mentioned, Louisiana's number of 239 is 5.83% of the national total in a state with 1.4% of the national population. 877-217-5757. Mike in Sherwood. Mike, good morning. You're on with Bishop Duca. Good morning to you.
Yes, sir. I was curious. I've never heard, why don't priests get married?
Well, that's not a coronavirus question, but I'm sure you've been up to that. And by the way, Bishop Duca was the vocations director in Dallas at SMU, right?
That's right.
So you were trying to convince young men, if they were called, to do what you have done, and that's usually one of the big questions that I want to have a family. Well, in this case, you have a family, but it's not the kind of family that most people cherish to have.
The reason is that, of course, following Christ, you did not get married. We decided that it's best that a priest not marry in order that he might be able to better and more freely serve his people. Now, Protestant ministers of other religions, serve very well their people, but there are certain advantages when you are single. And in times like this especially, it does free you up not to be so concerned by going. You can be a little bit freer to go out to help those in need and not bring it back to a family. There's some freedom, a little more freedom in that. There is a way in which we dedicate ourselves and see our parishes as our family and kind of feel ourselves more able to minister to them in different ways. In some ways, it's easier for me to be called into the middle of a family as a single person, mm-hmm. and get close to the people. So it doesn't replace marriage. You know, there's still an ache sometimes for that kind of close camaraderie with someone. But we also find great fulfillment in different kinds of intimacy and help when we connect ourselves more deeply with our people.
Another listener, Tracy, writes that the two countries that have been most affected by this in deaths, Italy and Spain, are overwhelmingly Catholic. I'm sure this has affected not only the flock, but you've got to have some priests and nuns and people who are in your line of work who have been affected.
Oh, yeah, I think Italy's had some number of priests that have already died and some convents that have been affected deeply. Of course, some of the convents probably had some very elderly sisters as well, but they're also being affected. I don't know if religion plays a part in the spread of the virus there because they've also closed down their churches and everything. In fact, pretty radically at the very beginning of this, there may be other issues that cause that, but yes, definitely there have been priests that have died. I think maybe one has even died in the United States from COVID already. And so it is affecting the church at all levels.
Another listener, and this is one I'm sure you get every now and then, Bishop, have you met the Pope?
I have. In fact, luckily, just in December, right after Thanksgiving, we went for our five-year visit with the Holy Father called the Ad Limina visit to the door of St. Peter. And so we had a chance to have a great experience in Italy and visit with the Holy Father and all his supporting congregations. But luckily, before all this became a problem in Italy.
Another listener asked me to tabulate the U.S. percentage of the world number for coronavirus, and I'm doing that right now on my 21.4%. We have 5% of the world population. We have 21.4% of the reported coronavirus cases. It's hit this country especially hard.
I think so. I think also it's because, you know, numbers now are very relative because they're not sure if the testing is getting all the numbers, which would affect the percentage of deaths. But also, they're not sure now that maybe even the numbers coming out of China were exactly right.
They may not be right.
Everybody's trying to figure out the right numbers here, so we're all catching up. But it'll soon become clear, and I think that'll help us get a better sense of what has come forward.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on with Bishop Duca. Hi, Paul.
How are you doing, Jim? How are you doing, Bishop?
Hello.
How you doing? Lifelong Catholic, born and raised, definitely going to die Catholic. But with all this going on, churches that have never, ever been closed before are closed now, Catholic churches. If this continues on for a while, is the church looking at what long-term ramification this is going to have of people attending or people even having the faith that you need to belong to one particular church?
You know what? I don't have the answer to that. My sense is, in talking with people, there's still a great yearning to return back to the community, and maybe there might be, I'm hoping, a deeper appreciation of the sacraments. I'm also hoping that everybody, in a very profound way, kind of begins to see what are our real securities in life? What are the things that really sustain us? There are many things we can't do right now that were the center of our life before, but now we can't get to them. They're kind of false securities. My hope is that people begin to more and more put their faith in God, which will revive their faith and bring us together with a greater desire to receive the Eucharist and come together as a family of faith. That's my hope. And we'll have to see how that goes. There's going to be a great, as in all aspects of our society, there's going to be also a financial difficulty and other things. But those things, we can overcome those easily. I believe we'll find, I'm hoping to find a revival of faith within our church, within our community, across the board.
I recall Hubert Humphrey, the LSU graduate who became Vice President of the United States and almost was elected President. He said a society is ultimately judged by how it treats people at the beginning of life and people at the end of life. And fortunately, coronavirus is not affecting infants, at least not yet, but it is affecting people of age disproportionately.
Right.
And this is something that has been heartening as far as the American response to trying to protect people who are senior citizens.
Right. It is. It's been heartening, and it just goes to the desire and the good work of our medical professionals. They're really hanging in there. They're frontline ministers and frontline people that are making the heroic efforts right now, and we want to commend them and keep them in our prayers.
Will in Scotlandville. Will, you're on with Bishop Michael Duca. Hi, Will.
Hey, good morning, Jim. How are you doing today? Jim, I would just like to ask you and the bishop, everyone that's dying that tested positive for corona, who to say that they actually died from the coronavirus or did they just die from something other?
All right. Well, let's trust our medical professionals, but if somebody has all the symptoms and shows up and tests positive for coronavirus, I think it's a pretty good indication that coronavirus is what's affecting them. And the other thing is that there are people early on in New Orleans, they were talking about people coming to emergency rooms and testing negative for the flu, and they didn't know what was going on. There are people who have died who we don't know died of coronavirus. So if anything, the numbers are lower than the actual result rather than higher.
Right.
So, Bishop, we commend you for your service to the community and as Catholics, service to the Lord. So God bless
you.
Well,
thank you. Thank you for your good work here. I listen to your show all the time and appreciate your good work as well. And let's continue to keep especially our medical professionals and all the people struggling right now in our prayers.
Thank you, and good luck.
All right, thank you.
And stay well.
That's my goal.
You gave me a blessing. I'm doing my best to
thank
give you,
you
one.
I receive it. I'll receive all I can.
All right.